This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey guys, usually on Fridays, I'm doing a big weekend interview for you, and we have a secret podcast for Bulwark Plus subscribers that is JVL and Sarah. But because you might have heard, we have a very big news day and a lot of important things to discuss, I pulled the secret podcast over onto the main feed, so it's me and JVL and Sarah. But if you want to support the Bulwark and you want to get pure, uncut JVL and Sarah, and you have not done so yet, join the Bulwark Plus, plus.thebulwark.com. All right, up next, we've got me, JVL and Sarah, and then Jonathan Martin of Politico. Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. It's Friday, June 28th. And, you know, we had a little change of lineup this morning. We've got the Next Level crew here to respond to what was the worst presidential debate in American history last night. I've got JVL and Sarah. Hey, guys.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Okay, so we have a lot of, I did the Sarah there. Okay, we have a lot of takes on thebulwark.com this morning, which range from Joe Biden should absolutely drop out to Joe Biden should seriously consider dropping out. So we will get to that. But I think it's important context before we talk about the Joe Biden machinations to talk first about Donald Trump. Donald Trump last night, in my opinion, gave the worst debate performance on substance of any presidential candidate ever, non-Donald Trump category. Maybe Admiral James Stockdale would be the only other one in the game. He defended a riot at the Capitol. He talked about immigrants taking black jobs. He like weirdly attacked his opponent's son for no good reason. He bragged about his golf game. And it was a performance that like, on a scale of normal politicians, it was like a 2 on a scale from 1 to 10. And it was deeply scary. He promised retribution against his opponent on stage. It was a deeply scary and bad substantive performance, in my opinion. Do you guys agree with that? What do you think about Donald Trump's performance, Sarah?
All he did was lie. And, you know, I just got out of a focus group. So obviously we're trying to focus group this right now. And it was not lost on, and these were all Trump voters who are kind of out on Trump. And so this is a category of people that we always talk to because we view them as persuadable. And so they were very aware that the performance last night by Donald Trump was filled with lies. And in fact, many of them sort of said that he was lying the whole time and that he was saying crazy things. So I, last night, as I was watching it, was like, you know, sometimes people say insane things, but like in a normal tone. And for Donald Trump, saying things in a normal tone allows him to be winning, you know, the expectations game already. And so I was pleased to hear these voters have it not be lost on them that the substance of what Trump was saying was problematic. Like, he wasn't doing anything last night that made these guys be like, wow, this guy's really changed. Like, this is a, you know, so that is not where the voters were. And so I think that's good, right?
Another thing I should have mentioned, like, he's asked about childcare costs and he's like, the migrants are attacking Wisconsin. You know, he did not engage on the substance. Like, multiple times Jake had to be like, the question was about childcare costs, you know, and like you started talking about immigration. So like,
to me, this was where Trump was being effective, though, right? Like, he's asked about January 6th. Anything he's asked about, he turns it back to his great economy, the problems with immigration. Like, his prep was on how to deflect and pivot away from what are massive liabilities. And I think from a, just you and I both know, when you are sort of training people for debates, there's often the like satisfy and steer as a tool, right? You're like, kind of answer the question only the way a little bit that you want to, and then quickly go to the things that are your strengths. And like, he was doing that last night, and he was doing it effectively. But it's a question of, can people identify the mendacity in there? But to do that, you have to be sort of read in on some of the substance.
JVL, am I overstating it?
No, I mean, Trump was, he does this thing where he is incoherent, or he says things that are non sequiturs, or he just makes things up. Like, for instance, illegal immigrants are taking black jobs. Black unemployment is at the lowest rate it's been over a sustained period of time in American history right now. So what does that even mean? Right. I mean, forget.
Well, what like is the, a black job? Black job? What's right? a black it's, job?
But like, take the most charitable reading of that, which is just he means any job currently held.
Don't answer by that a, question.
No, but like, maybe he means any job currently held by a black person. Right. Maybe he's not referring like, oh, that's a black job. He's just saying that job is held by a black person. Let's just pretend that. Even under the most charitable reading, it's just nonsense. Right. And then, you know, talking about NATO, the parts where actually where he was the weakest and Biden was the best were talking about Ukraine and Russia. And Trump talked about, he said they in this context being NATO, were going out of business before he became president. What does that mean?
It's a fire sale at NATO, selling off the things that aren't nailed down.
So it betrays a person who has been president, who doesn't actually understand anything about how the world works. And but as Sarah said, he was reasonable Trump last night. He wasn't, I wrote about this early this week. There are two modes of Trump. There is like the Trump who yells about the sharks and the batteries and stuff. And then there's the reasonable Trump. And he did his reasonable Trump. So because he did it in a calm voice and didn't shout, and because he was confined enough that he didn't take digressions that were too long because he only had 2 minutes at a time.
It was a substantively terrible debate performance.
But yes, it was a terrible debate performance. But here's the thing. This is not me attempting to defend Joe Biden. I don't know how anybody counters that. Look, let's pretend Pete Buttigieg is up there, right? I mean, it's just...
Oh my God,
it's just Trump doing his Trump thing. People are okay, right? Like people are basically okay with the Trump thing. And because he just gets graded on a different curve than any other figure in politics.
Sure.
That's what I'm getting at there.
Sure, he gets graded on a different curve, but I mean, there was softball after softball he put out there for somebody that was doing the set. This is how we get to the Joe Biden of this. I wanted to talk about Trump first for this reason. So you've transitioned us, JBL. I reject that. I thought Donald Trump, he was only good on performance if you're saying that good is like he didn't like try to bite Joe Biden or like lash out at him. The only time he actually emotionally lashed out was when his golf game was criticized, which in itself, I think, is something you might have been able to observe if you were a deft counterparty. You know, he gave opportunity after opportunity. Andrew Egger brought this up in the morning shots this morning, like the Joe Biden answer on abortion compared to Kamala Harris's on CNN later. Like there were plenty of ways to counter. It doesn't mean that Trump is going to go down to zero or that he wasn't going to get graded on a curve or that it wasn't unfair. You know, as David Frum wrote in The Atlantic very aptly, like it was a total indictment on this whole system that Donald Trump is allowed to stand up there and get treated like, granted, all that. Like, yeah, he gets graded on a curve. Yeah. But he still, even on the curve, was horrific substantively last night. And his counterparty, Joe Biden, was utterly incapable of making a single coherent point against him. A single one.
Agree.
And people are like, the Barack Obama debate was bad. Like on a scale of all 0 to 100, like Mitt Romney got a 92, Barack Obama got a 71, Donald Trump got a 35, Joe Biden got a 0, like last night, on like debate skill performance. Like he went up against somebody that offered him plenty of opportunities, and like he can't do it. He couldn't do it. Do you disagree with that, JVL? Is that an incorrect assessment of Joe Biden's performance last night?
I agree with it completely. Nobody has been, I said this in the post show last night, I've been very high on Joe Biden from like the minute he declared his candidacy in 2019. I thought he was a very good candidate in 2020. I think he's generally been an exceptionally good president since then. And he has, you know, like given a bunch of good speeches as recently as the State of the Union. And last night was the single worst performance ever on a presidential debate stage, maybe including primaries.
I think it was the single worst public performance, politics or non-politics, yeah, in the mass media era.
People who want to wave aside this and be like, you know, look, but I'm still voting for Joe Biden. Sure, I'm still voting for Joe Biden too.
Yeah, same.
To blind yourself to how catastrophically bad last night was is unwise, I think. And now maybe it doesn't matter. Like maybe 2 weeks from now, the polling hasn't moved and everything is basically the same. And maybe, you know, maybe in the long run, Joe Biden's able to roll a couple double sixes and he wins the, you know, he stays in the race and he said those things are all possible. Right. But just evaluating what we saw last night, if you're not troubled by that, then I don't know what to say. I just don't know what to say, because if you look at that and you're like, yeah, no, it was okay. Like, was he sick? Sure. Yeah, great. I'm sick too. I get it. Was CNN terrible? Yes. CNN was terrible, right? Well, did Trump just lie? Yes. All Trump did was lie, right? Biden's performance was the sum of all fears. It was what everybody has always, on the pro-democracy side, has all, you know, all the grabbing onto the arms of the chair every time he, right? And up to this point, right, we've always grabbed onto the arms of the chair and then like he's done it and we've all been, whew, okay. Last night was the nightmare. And if you're not prepared to grapple with that, then I don't know. Again, I don't know what to say because I don't understand. I don't understand.
Yeah. Sarah, so I want both your take on this and what you heard from the focus groups. I will prompt by offering a one-person focus group. My very best friend in the world does not like politics, doesn't watch politics. We don't talk about politics. He never texts me about politics. He watched for 5 minutes last night. He was horrified. It was like, you know, somebody coming in clean, your non-paying attention voter looks at that and is like, what is happening? How is this real? I'm curious your take on it, Sarah, and then whether you have, there are any green shoots from the voters you've talked to.
Well, let me back up for a second. So last night, I watched the debate at the Aspen Ideas Festival. So I'm out here in Aspen. So it's on stage.
So with average people.
Well, yeah. No, it's a bunch of Democrats, right? A bunch of, I mean, as best I could tell, these are Joe Biden's people. These are wealthy people who came to Aspen, who wanted to hear about ideas and talk politics. And we all watched the debate together. And look, they were jeering at Trump when Trump would lie, like the, you know, and scoffing and things like that. But also like, people were in pain in the room. And I'll tell you what, so was I, because I knew we did like a pre thing. And in my pre, we had 30 minutes, you know, the panel, and it was me and Celinda Lake, who's a Dem pollster, Mike Madrid, who's one of the early Lincoln Project guys, who then does like,
he was on the pod a couple weeks ago. But
he does a spin. Yeah. Okay. And then, Eddie Glaude Jr. He's on Morning Joe all the time. Okay. So, and Jonathan Capehart was moderating. So we did our upfront. What are we looking for? And I said the thing that I've been saying on these pods the whole time. Biden needs to look alive, right? Like Biden needs to go on offense. Biden needs to be able to go on offense. If he can do that, then these double haters, like the main thing people are worried about is his age. He's gotta absolve them of that fear. And he didn't. And I watched the opening of the debate and saw how he looked from the jump, how his voice sounded. And pretty early on, I thought, it doesn't matter what he says because I can't understand it. And neither can anybody else. Like, he was talking too fast. He was clearly jammed with facts as though he was debating somebody else on the merits and substance of policy and not a madman who's going to lie the whole time. That early part where he was trailed off and then just said, Medicare. And so I watched this. I knew pretty quickly, like, okay, this is it. This is really, really bad. And I knew I was going to have to get back up on stage after I had just made this big bull case, the bull case for Biden and what he needed to do and how he was going to do it and how it was going to turn this race around. And I got up and I basically said to people, like, I can't, I have a job. I have a job that I want to do. My job is to beat Donald Trump. I am not in the electing Joe Biden business. I'm in the beating Donald Trump business. And we can't solve a problem without being honest about the problem that is in front of us. And we all just watched. And I was like, we all watched the same thing. Then Cindy Lake and Mike Madrid both kind of tried to spin it. Like, yep, wasn't good, but like, this is about Trump. You make it about Trump. And I was just, I mean, we argued about it on stage. I was like, absolutely not. Like, here's the thing. I have been gaslit by the Republican Party now for a long time about Trump. I am not going to let people gaslight me into saying that what I just saw last night isn't what I saw. Because that debate performance didn't just open up questions about, can we elect Joe Biden? It's opening up a lot of questions about, like, can Joe Biden do this job?
Especially in 5 years.
Yeah. No, and nobody thinks that. And listen, I was in this room of Democrats and I was saying what I thought was true. I told them I owed them my best analysis and not spin. And my best analysis was that I have not wanted to play fantasy politics. I have not been in the Joe Biden needs to step aside. Once it was him, I was like, what are you going to do? And look, I wanted him not to run again. I was very clear on that for a really long time. But once it was him, I said, okay, we're all just going to have to get there. But you know what? Last night, we have to figure something out.
Where was the room on it? How did the room
break down?
With
me. Yeah. They were with me. Yeah. I mean, like, Mike Madrid kind of did a little bit of like a cri de corps, like, there's nothing to do but grab our swords and like be on offense. And like, people were like, yeah, like, I need that. You know, I need some hope here. But like, people were also like, what can we do something? Like, there was a lot of people who were just like panicked at it.
You talked to some actual voters, though, this morning? Because I do want to get back to what Joe Biden should do, but I'm curious. I'm open to the possibility that every single person texting me and messaging me on Instagram and calling me and DMing me is wrong. and that people who didn't go to college or whatever saw a different thing than I did. Did you see any hope of that in your focus group this morning?
I said this before, my green shoots are this, that listening to those voters, they didn't be like, oh, because again, Trump voters who were kind of out on Trump after January 6th, you know, don't like him. And they weren't like, oh, I thought Trump was great. No, I feel great voting for him. I'll tell you what it did do, though. The people who had been leaning Biden over Trump were off of him. They were talking about being embarrassed. I mean, there was words like embarrassed. It was words like, you know, sick to my stomach. You know, I can't believe this is the best we can do. And look, they weren't mean to Biden. They were just like, Biden's cognitively can't do it. Biden's cognitively not there. And that was it. That was all they were saying. And look, they don't think Trump's fit. They were clear that Trump was lying. Trump was BSing. Trump wasn't answering the questions. Like, even more so than maybe I thought, they were on to Trump. But they did not think Joe Biden could do it. And they were all more third party curious, or a bunch of them were saying they just like leave it blank or not vote. Like, they're just like, can't do it.
I mean, it was embarrassing. I don't know. I mean, JVL is a teenager, so I don't know. Maybe you have some thoughts on how do you show that to a teenager and be like, America is really great. These are the guys that we have that are going to be the president. And it was embarrassing. And it wasn't just the performative. There's almost no point in talking about Joe Biden's performance, like on the figure skating side of things, because it was like literally just like falling down, like on the ice. I mean, like there's no even point in discussing the performative part. The substantive part was bad. He did not make coherent substantive cases. He got stuck in the mental cul-de-sacs. He got asked about abortion. He starts talking about migrant death, but not even in a way that makes sense. You know, occasionally he'd have like three good sentences and he'd be like, okay, all right. Like, he's making some good points here on NATO or January 6th, but then he'd start talking about something else. And then I mean, you're right, Jack. It's like the transcript is as bad as watching it was. And so, like, this is what Crystal wrote about this morning. It's like, I don't think that Joe Biden has dementia, but I also, like, how do you look at that person and say that if there is a crisis in this country, if there is some sort of crisis in the year 2028, like, let's say somebody threatens to nuke us, there's a Cuba missile crisis in the year 2028, that guy is up for it. And if the response is, well, I'll have good people around him, Trump won't, Kamala will be there. It's like, well, then let's just fucking have Kamala or one of the people around him run. Let's have Tony Blinken run for president. You know, that is the reality. And this is why I'm frustrated with some of the wagon circling that we're seeing this morning.
And part of it is, like, I think that going into last night, I was deeply rooting for Joe Biden, right? He needed to have a great performance, and I wanted him to show the country he could do it. And if he had done that, that's what we'd be talking about today. But what we saw last night, the idea that we can just run away from it, I think is malpractice. And I've been fighting with Bill about this, our Bill Kristol, but like, here's one of the things the focus group members were saying that I think is exactly right. They were like, it's not about age. They were like, I don't know, I know 82-year-olds who are super with it. And that's fine. They were like, they're both old, but like, Joe Biden doesn't seem like he can do it. And that's what they all said. They weren't even being mean. They were just like, it's not really about age. It's about what you can do. And he can't do it. The wagon circling is a disservice to everybody. Like, Joe Biden has to, this is my honest, I think he has to do what is best for this country. And what is best for this country is that he steps aside, releases the delegates. I don't know all the legal machinations, but like, I think he can, there are ways to get around Kamala, and I think they should.
JVL, I just want your take, because the response to this is, okay, Tim, yeah, it was horrible. He was terrible, but like, he's been a good president for 4 years. There isn't any reason to have concern about a crisis 4 years from now because Joe Biden's done a good job. I that's cope, right? Or is there something to that?
I am slightly different from Bill and I think you on this. I don't have much of concern about Biden's ability to govern over the next 4 years.
At age 86?
At age 86. I mean, I think it's likely to be fine. My concerns are strictly political. Here's the problem. We can be concerned, but ultimately we have no agency here because it's his decision. And if he decides not to step aside, like then I'll go, well, so what do we do? You know, and the answer is, I think you make the case for Biden as truthfully as possible. And you say, yeah, I honestly do think, and this is the first time ever that I have looked at it and thought, all right, maybe he should step aside, because Sarah and I've had this discussion 36 times over the course of the last 2 years. And Sarah would say, gotta step aside, so that, you know, big Gretch or Warnock or, you know, Josh Shapiro, right? Can do it. And I would say, there is no evidence that any of these people would be faring any better. And I am open to the possibility that if Biden took your advice, our advice, and stepped aside this afternoon, I am open to the possibility that whoever winds up replacing him on the ticket would wind up doing worse come November 3rd than Biden would have come November 3rd. I think that is possible. But at the same time, this is the first time I've looked at this and thought, no, maybe the better percentage play here is for Biden to step aside. And if I'm saying that, like, I don't understand people who looked at last night and wouldn't say that, right?
Like, the people have to talk to him. Like, people around him, and this is what I wrote in the article this morning about Jill and Joe need to have a family talk, but Mike Donilon needs to have a talk with him and Ron Klain. And I'm deeply concerned that everything that I've heard is that inner circle won't do it. And what I am saying to those people is that you have a patriotic duty to at least talk it through, like, and to at least be honest with us about what he's capable of and what a path forward is. Because, like, just saying, like, oh, you guys are bedwetting and, oh, you have to vote for Joe Biden anyway. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll vote for Joe Biden anyway. If Joe Biden is nominated next month in Chicago, this podcast will be 3 months talking about how we need to elect him anyway, and he will have good people around him, and Trump will have crazy people around him, and it's an existential threat, and not a great choice, but it's the choice we have to make, obviously. But there's a choice now, and these guys have to at least talk. Like, I'm going to be very fucking pissed at Ron Klain and Mike Donilon and Anita Dunn and all these people if they don't at least have a serious talk about this. Right?
Of course.
Like,
absolutely.
That's crazy.
Yeah, this is a moment where, again, I think the Democratic Party in general, not universally, but in general, the Democratic Party's response to Trump and Trumpism and Trump's authoritarian attempt has been very good. They haven't played perfect baseball, but in general, they've been very good. Their response was to move towards the center, not towards the left. Nancy Pelosi, I think conducted herself very well as speaker during the Trump years. Biden adopted a path of looking forward to be bipartisan and all that. The Democratic Party needs to continue to be good and responsible in this moment. And part of that means the party leaders need to have very serious conversations about this and can't just do the fall in line. Look, I mean, again, it's not up to them. If Biden decides not to, and as Sarah says, he's nominated, then at that point, they got to grab the sword and go out or whatever. But there is still time. Yes.
You're watching everybody do this thing. I'm watching everyone do this thing. Even the folks last night were kind of doing it. They were like, Biden needs to say this. And they were all like, you know, putting their words in and they're basically being, and Trump has all these liabilities and they're ticking off Trump's liabilities. And I'm like, yes, Donald Trump is an extremely flawed candidate. The fact that anybody's not beating him by 20 points is a deep mystery. He's a convicted felon, adjudicated rapist, an all-around bad person with terrible policies and a terrible character. You have to have a candidate who can prosecute that case. Like the fact that last night, with all of Trump's many liabilities, like Democrats seem to be coping by attacking, you know, Trump and listing all the vulnerabilities he has. Fine. You need a candidate who can make the case of those vulnerabilities. And last night, I'm not going to give the moderators any shit because they moderated a perfectly clean debate. It is on Joe Biden to fact check Trump. It's on Joe Biden to push back. Like that's what the debate is. The moderators, look, do I wish that we had a quick fact check function that, but like, that's not what's going to happen. You say there's no mechanism for someone like Trump. Like that's not true. There is. The mechanism is that there is an opposing candidate who can call him a liar and can effectively adjudicate that case publicly. And I think Pete Buttigieg would have done that. And I think Josh Shapiro could have done that. And I think Gretchen Whitmer could have done that. I think the idea that with his immense vulnerabilities, people can make the case against him. We will continue to make the case against him. That's all we're going to do, right? I'm in the business of making sure people understand Trump's liabilities, but like you got to have a candidate who can make that case a little bit.
From like the subhead of Frum's piece in The Atlantic, which I'll put in the show notes I've referenced, is the whole, you know, the debate was a travesty because the whole premise was to treat a failed coup leader as a legitimate candidate for the presidency again. I agree with that. Like there have been a million failure points before last night, right? Every responsible Republican, the news media, the fucking Justice, Merrick Garland. We could go down a whole list of people that like, how are we here where we're treating this guy like a normal candidate? He should be in jail. Yes, agree. But okay, now we're here. Like there was not a single, maybe I'm wrong. If you're even on a Biden stan TikTok account, he did not do a single sentence that was good. Like there was not a single attack on Donald Trump across, like his most vigorous attack on Trump was on the golf scores.
It doesn't matter, but like Biden was also wrong about that. Like they like, Biden had to like retract his handicap. Ugh.
Sorry, JVL, do you have anything on the CNN side of it?
Yeah, I would just say, go back and look at the Trump-Biden debates in 2020. And Biden cleaned the floor with him. And Biden did this very effective stuff where he would sort of look straight to camera and talk to people and to his folks, well, you know. And what we saw last night was categorically different. It was categorically different. It was, I you can't polish this.
All right, so let's go. So there's the process of how it would work to get rid of him, and then there's the question of what he could do if we end up with Biden. So let's do the first one first. There are ways around Kamala, but not really, is really the short of it. You know, it's about the convention delegates now. Joe Biden has all the 90% of the convention delegates. They're not bound, so there could be some sort of floor effort. I lived through that in 2016. If Joe Biden is like, it's really hard to imagine how you get 50% of delegates in a hostile attack on Joe Biden on the floor if he's in there. So Joe Biden has to step aside. You know, I assume he runs out his presidency. There are a lot of awkward conversations there. If you can't run, why are you still, do you resign the presidency? But there's not time to nominate a vice president. So he probably stays in the presidency and he could endorse somebody. It would be very challenging not to endorse Kamala Harris. And then if not, then you go to a convention floor fight like it's the 1970s and other people could put their hat in the ring. But it becomes very, I think, just as a practical matter, you don't really have time for a real campaign. I mean, maybe the DNC could host a debate. Maybe you have a DNC debate the day before in Chicago or something. But I think it becomes very challenging to pass on a vice president that's the first Black woman vice president at that point. I mean, that, like, something would have to be. It's hard for me to even imagine the scenario, but go ahead, try to paint it.
Okay. So here's what has to happen. People have to understand that Joe Biden can't do it and Kamala Harris can't be the person. Both of them have to step.
I reject the second point, but go ahead, but continue.
You think Kamala can do it?
I mean, Kamala would not, if Joe Biden had dropped down in 2022, would Kamala have been the horse I would have ridden? No. Okay. Like, probably not. But, like, Kamala is capable of doing a campaign against Donald Trump. Like, Kamala can criticize Donald Trump. Kamala can give a speech. Kamala can, you know, go in hostile interviews. I reject that she's totally unacceptable. But I don't think that she's the strongest. And to JVL's point, maybe she ends up doing weaker than Biden. We're in a really bad situation right now. But I think that she would performatively be, like, a million times better than Joe Biden.
Yeah. I could potentially get there on that particular point. My best case scenario is this. Joe Biden steps aside and releases his delegates, that Whitmer and Shapiro, some combination thereof, like, the governors all get together, all the Democratic governors, and they say, we're going to back, and including Westmore, we're going to back Whitmer and Shapiro. Because here's the thing about one of the main reasons that it's really tough to switch people out, one of the reasons that JVL kind of always put forward as an issue is, like, these people don't have name ID. And that is true. Like, they don't have name ID. The average person across the country doesn't know who Josh Shapiro is or who Gretchen Whitmer is or who Westmore is or whatever. But you know who does know who Gretchen Whitmer is? The voters of Michigan, one of the key swing states. You know who does know who Josh Shapiro is? The people of Pennsylvania, who voted for him by a 14-point margin. Gretchen Whitmer won Michigan by a 10-point margin. Two of the key swing states already have really high name ID for those two people. And they are Midwestern governors, and they are young. And I think that if all the governors came out and said, this is who we think should do it, these are excellent candidates, they backed them hard, like, the Democratic Party would have to be unified. And Kamala and Biden would both have to say, okay. Like, it would have to be a Democratic family decision for the good of the country and for the best case scenario to beat Trump. And I'll tell you, this is a moment where people have to make a decision that is not about their own ego. I would be very disappointed in Joe Biden after that, and Joe Biden and everybody else, to decide that the best thing for him to do is to continue on. It would be a deeply selfish proposition. And of course, I'll back him. And of course, I'll do everything I can if he does it. But I think it is wrong. And I think that there is a world in which consensus can be reached behind closed doors. And then people can go out strong with a consensus candidate that people say they're going to back. That's what parties are for. It's the one thing political parties are for.
Yeah. And also, just by the way, like, we're the only fucking system. Not the only, but in most advanced democracies, the parties just choose who the prime minister is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is how things work in other countries. This is not, like, a crazy system, an anti-democratic system, right? But again, Joe Biden has the delegates, right? So he has
on him. Yep.
He has to release them. A challenge to him, I guess, is possible. I mean, you know, who the hell knows? JVL, do you have anything on the convention question?
I think there are only two realistic scenarios for Biden stepping down in terms of who the nominee is. And in one of those, the nominee is Kamala Harris. I think that's the 90% scenario. And the other, it's Gavin Newsom. Because Gavin Newsom has already been thinking about this, right? I mean, Gavin Newsom, it is not true that he could plug and play a campaign in the way that Kamala Harris could, but the guy has clearly had this on his brain. If Joe Biden were to step aside, I think we should be realistic that the alternative is unlikely to be Whitmer or Shapiro or any of those people.
Unlikely, but we're in uncharted territory.
Sure.
I'll say, I saw Gavin last night. I don't want to betray any confidences, but Gavin, despite the fact that Sarah's mean to him all the time, Gavin is apparently a fan because he recognized me across the room. he gave a very full-throated defense of Joe Biden last night. I think it's kind of hard to get to Gavin, really. To me, it's like if you're getting rid of Kamala, well, who knows? Again, it would be up to the delegates. Joe Biden would not be able to give his delegates to Kamala, but it's very hard for me in a party that's core base is black women that like they're going to pass over a black woman for a white guy who is her in-state rival. Like, that's just not going to happen.
This idea that you can't bypass Kamala Harris, I don't know. I've been listening to voters for years about Kamala Harris, black, white, Latino. I think she probably does better with young people. But like, I've not heard black voters be like, oh yeah, I would be furious if they, like, people are just like, I don't really see her. I had high hopes, but she's not doing much. I don't think anybody would care. I think people over index on this identity stuff in a way that I don't think is real.
Maybe. I also think that though the low bar for Kamala is like, isn't that how the narrative of this stuff goes? It's like, somebody steps up to the plate, somebody steps up to the moment and does it.
But also, I mean, she starts with the name ID, right? I mean, it isn't just that, right? It isn't just identity politics. It's that she is the sitting vice president. She has stature and gravitas simply because of that. She has been through national spotlight. She has been vetted fully.
I'm so happy. So if there's any doubt, we've got people being like, misogyny. It's like, this is woman on woman crime. It's like Sarah's the one that's like ridiculous.
I've been listening to voters.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just teasing.
I'm not convinced 100% that if we could run like the two timelines, one with Josh Shapiro at the head of the ticket, one with Kamala Harris, the head of the ticket, I'm not convinced that Shapiro does better every single time. That's all. That's all I'm trying to say.
The subtext of a lot of this, the whole time that Bill has been out there being like, we should replace Joe, we should replace Joe, we're going to get Whitmer Warnock. A lot of the subtext of why some of us have been like, no, I don't think that that's going to happen is because we've believed that it is overwhelmingly likely to be Kamala. Maybe not. Maybe it won't be, but it's overwhelmingly likely. And up until 14 hours ago, I was like, that's a worse choice. This morning, I judge it to be a significantly better choice. Not guaranteed to be better choice. Not guaranteed to be a better choice, but probably a better choice.
I'm exactly where you are, Tim.
Anything else on that, Sarah, before we move on to Joe?
I'd be very worried about it being Kamala. I think that what we have seen of her, again, using my eyes, what I have seen of a person performing the job and doing the work publicly, it's been deeply unimpressive. And the voters don't care for her. And this is the thing right now. You might be listening to me right now, listener, and saying, but misogyny, but racism, but, you know, the moderators, but whatever. And I just... all of that can be true. I can stipulate every point of it. And the only thing that matters to me is beating Donald Trump and who can beat Donald Trump. And I would just be very concerned that Kamala can't beat Donald Trump in a way that I think other people can. And you cannot like the way that voters judge Kamala, but the fact is that they do. Now, I will say, I think I agree with you guys, though, that because she hasn't been seen a ton, right? If she came out and she did perform, right? She just goes on offense against Trump all day long. Like, I'm for that. If that's the option, I think I'm for that over just letting this thing go. I think I'm willing to roll the dice on it. But I just think if you're going to make a change, there are better options.
Let's say Joe Biden stays. What can be done? Our new colleague, Sam Stein, I sent in my hastily written Joe Biden and Jill need to have a conversation last night. He said to me, it was a good piece, but you should use your expertise. You used to be a comms person. Like, if Biden stays, what would he do? And my answer to that is basically, he needs to demonstrate that he's a human and not a robot. And like, he needs to demonstrate that he's up for this. The reason why this debate was in June was because his team thought it would allow him to show the American people that he was up for it. That didn't work. So he's got to go on Fox. He's got to go out among real people. If Donald Trump's not going to debate him again, he's got to find other ways to be in high stakes environments. He's got to be off prompter. Is he capable of doing all that? Like, maybe the answer is, the counter to that is, he's not capable of doing all that. And so the best thing to do is hide him and hope Donald Trump implodes. I don't fucking know. But to me, it's like, if he's capable and he had a bad night, he had a cold or whatever, then that's what he should do. Go out among people, be with people, let them touch him, and go on Fox and fight with people. Maybe that's wrong. Sarah, if Anita called you tomorrow? What'd you tell her?
You know, I do think that there's basically nothing to do, but, and I'll go back to like my fundamentals. The biggest coalition in American politics is not a pro-Joe Biden coalition. It is an anti-Trump coalition. And so I would flood the zone with surrogates who are ready to go on offense against Trump. And I would basically, like, you need to make the race so that it basically doesn't matter who the candidate on the Democratic side is. Now, I don't believe that to be true because I do think it matters. I think you have to give people something. But I would just say our only position is offense. Our only position is offense. And so we go hard with every person at our disposal. Everyone goes out and just says, Donald Trump is too dangerous. We will all be there to help. There is a great team around him. You got to get Blinken out. You got to get the cabinet out. You got to get everybody, be on a first name basis with them. You need people to understand that a president doesn't do it all themselves. So you have to make the American people aware of and confident in the team around him. That's tough because I think their confidence isn't there on Kamala, but you got to get her out there a ton. Like, you got to let her do the job you think she could do as president. If she was running, she has to do that as the vice president. She has to become a top effective surrogate and, you know, full-blown offense against Donald Trump. That's it. And look, that's what I'll continue to do, like, no matter what, right? Like, I just think about it as a strategist is I will continue to pound Trump's unfitness for that job. But I look through the eyes of the voters last night and they don't think either person's fit. And that's where I just think there's a ton of opportunity. Like, give them someone they think is fit. Like, the bar is actually not so, so high.
Give them someone they think is fit.
Yeah.
Jonathan?
Yeah. I mean, so if we're in a world where Biden stays as the nominee, if he is still able to do it. So last night was a bad night, right? If last night was just a bad night, then you just got to push him out there, right? And he's got to go hard on exactly what Sarah said, unless he doesn't have it.
There will be more cameras and more eyeballs on Joe Biden's next three appearances than there will have been on anything that he has done this year besides the State of the Union and the debate.
Yeah.
So there is an opportunity to do that, I guess, and it shouldn't be on a fucking teleprompter.
But if he doesn't have it, then the answer is that it has to become the Democratic Party versus Donald Trump. And as Sarah says with the survey, I mean, it really does. And I don't know how you do that. You know, I don't know how you have every single high profile Democrat from Buttigieg to Whitmer to Newsom, how you tell all these people, like, your job for the next 5 months is to get Joe Biden elected. Forget whatever you drop, whatever you're doing right now, go out and get on the campaign trail, and, you know, we're gonna use you as a candidate. I just don't know how that works, because the other thing is, a lot of these people, if they feel like the ship is going down, why are they gonna lash themselves to the mast, right? And that's hard. Look, can I just say one thing? It breaks my heart. I think a lot of people listening are gonna be like, don't you guys understand how unfair this is? Joe Biden has done everything we asked for. And the absolutely true. It is deeply unfair that, as you said, Tim, we've had all of these other failures of institutions, failures of people, failures of the American public, which have gotten us to this point. It is wildly unfair that, like, Joe Biden is the one who has to be perfect every single time. But that's also just where we are right now.
My friends that work for Joe Biden, if they see this clip, are going to be mad. But that's not true. Joe Biden had to be a fucking C minus. That's what Joe Biden had to be. A C fucking minus. Not perfect. Okay? And he was an F. He was a disaster. And, like, I'm sorry, guys, but it's unfair to all of us. There are 330 million people in America. 70 million of them vote for Donald Trump, so fuck them. But there are 260 other million people in this country, and it is unfair to them to, like, continue in a hopeless hubristic campaign that might end the fucking country. So if he can do it, then show us that he can fucking do it. But if he can't do it, he has to quit, because it's unfair to everybody else for him to stay. All right? Like, this isn't about Joe Biden.
It's not about Joe Biden. That's right. That's right. And this is where I think the patriotic thing to do is to think about what's best for the country. And I'll say again, Nobody could have beaten Donald Trump in 2020 from that field other than Joe Biden. God bless Joe Biden.
God bless Joe Biden.
God bless him. Now he has got to do the right thing for everybody else. And he could step away and he could bless other candidates. He could, right? A ticket can emerge of governors. Joe Biden can bless it. And like, he could do a great thing. That's a legacy. And it would be unprecedented. But he could do it. And they would beat Donald Trump.
One other thing. If you're the closest advisor to somebody, I won't name any names, but like some governor, and Joe Biden doesn't do it, do you go to Chicago?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think this can be a hostile takeover.
Yeah, me neither.
I think it has to be a Democratic Party decision where everybody gets together. And listen, you need catalyzing events for things like this. Like, and I think this is a catalyzing event. And I think that there, if the governors were willing to step up and everybody was willing to throw their weight behind them and Joe Biden was willing to step down, I don't think it's insane. And I think Kamala endorses them too. Everybody has to do the right thing here. And we should, I think it's our responsibility as whatever it is that we do, people who do the analysis to say, come on, guys, you can do this, right? It's not impossible. I think we deal too much in saying like this couldn't happen. Why couldn't it?
Here's Hakeem Jeffries just now. President Biden is scheduled to speak today around noon, as I understand it, in North Carolina. I'm looking forward to hearing from President Biden. And until he articulates a way forward in terms of his vision for America at this moment, I'm going to reserve comment about anything relative to where we are at this moment, other than to say I stand behind the ticket, I stand behind the Senate Democratic majority, and of course we're going to do everything that we need to as the House Democrats to win. That's pretty good. I mean, like that's the Speaker of the House. And by the way, Hakeem Jeffries would beat fucking Donald Trump. Maybe it should be Hakeem Jeffries, who's third in line to the fucking presidency. Maybe it should be Jeffries Harris. That's pretty interesting because I've been frustrated by the wagon. Like, that's not a wagon circle.
No, it's being honest about what we just saw and what just happened and leaving the door open for people to have honest conversations. And you know what, guys? This is what I just want to say. Of course that's happening. Everybody saw it with their eyes last night. Yeah, like this wagon circling, but like there's no way that people aren't having some honest conversations behind closed doors. And like, and that was pretty, that's a pretty public leaving the door open to the conversation.
My last thing, just so you guys know how terrible my night was, the MSNBC set was right next to the Fox Business set. So at the end of the night, I had to stand there as fucking all of these assholes, I can't even say their names, the worst people in the world walked past me with a smug grin on their face. And I was a big boy and I didn't say anything. And like the fact that I'm not in jail right now is a miracle. And then I came home and stayed up till 3:30 in the morning writing that thing. And I was supposed to be on Morning Joe at 6 in the morning and I slept through it. So I had an alarm panic and I had to deal with the smug smile of the worst people in the world last night. So I'm not letting that any of that affect my judgment, which was clear-eyed before all of that happened, which was clear-eyed at about 9:07 p.m. last night, as a matter of fact. It wasn't a great night for Timbo. Okay, we're going to do our best to get this up. Maybe we'll put this up in two parts, that way we can turn things around quicker. Sarah, any final words?
Listen, guys, tell the truth. Everybody should just tell the truth, okay? And like, let's not pretend things, okay? Yeah.
We can still beat this fucking guy.
We can still beat him. And the only job is to beat Donald Trump. That's the job.
All right. Thanks, JBL and Sarah. Up next, Jonathan Martin. And we are back with my buddy, my fellow New Orleanian, my fellow New Orleans transplant, Jonathan Martin, politics bureau chief and senior political columnist at Politico, co-author of This Will Not Pass, ominous, Trump, Biden, and the Battle for America's Future. J-Mart, as they call you. How you doing, bro?
The title holds up pretty well 3 years later here, huh?
It does. I was thinking, I was talking to my husband and I was like, who can I have? This is earlier in the week. I was like, who can I have on Friday that no matter what happens We'll give real talk. We'll be authoritative. You know, we'll be able to, you know, explain to the listener like what the stakes were of the debate, what the impact is going to be. I was like, we need to have J-Mart. And then the debate happened last night. And I was like, oh, I wish I would have booked a happy talk person. But Jonathan, you got a new article out this morning talking about how Democratic poobahs are responding to what we saw last night. Give us a rundown.
Well, first, I've always thought Tyler was a discerning, shrewd judge of character. So thanks for having me, Tim. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of last night was sort of a condensed version of what I've heard. You probably heard for the last couple of years, which is Democratic lawmakers, strategists, wise men and women grumble about Biden on background, believe he's too old to run, and don't want to put their names on the record saying it. Now, the difference is the critical mass of it obviously is substantial. But look, the bottom line is, as long as the people who are saying that Biden should drop out are not with a first name of representative, senator, or governor, Biden ain't moving. All the pundits in the world who think Biden should do the right thing, don't cut any ice. This has to be elected officials. Joe Biden cares about folks who have been on a ballot before. And if nobody's going to go public and say it, then they're going to nominate Biden again. So that's the question, Tim. Do Democrats really want Biden to consider dropping out of the race? And if they do, they'll step up and they'll say it on the record.
I thought that was a pretty dispiriting part of your piece about halfway through, about how, you know, folks are still kind of saying the same thing on background and not wanting to speak out. I mean, I don't even need people to say Joe Biden should definitely step aside, but at least being honest about what we saw and talking about whether or not there could be some reflection, I think is important. And, you know, we saw some of that. Claire McCaskill, who I was with last night.
Yes.
Late night.
Her first name is former. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Former senator. Yeah. So it's got to be a sitting senator. Chris Dodd, doesn't matter.
Yeah. I just think that it's got to be somebody from the current leadership structure of the party that's in office today. And I think the McCaskill thing got a lot of attention. I think she has real influence, especially with her fellow senators. But I think it's got to come from Democratic electeds. And I think the easiest way that this could happen, and I'm skeptical that it will happen, but if it was to happen, it would be vulnerable Democrats on the ballot this year who speak publicly. And that would obviously give cover to their leadership, who would then at least pretend like they were deferring to the wishes of their most vulnerable members. That's what it would have to be. It would have to be a collective action from the imperiled Democrats in the House, Senate, on the ballot this year.
Well, you talk to everybody at the highest levels. You're the national political columnist from Politico, so you had to send the text last night. I didn't send the text to my friends in the Biden White House because I don't have to. And, you know, I wanted to give them some time to breathe. But forget the senators and congressmen. Like, what do they say? Like, what do, you know, and Biden keeps a tight circle. You know, there's the Ron Klains and the Ricchettis and the Mike Donald. Like, do we have any sense today, this morning, like what the reaction was from the people that he listens to that don't have senator before their name?
That they bet big and lost, and that now they have to try to earn back, you know, what they lost, and that they've got months to do it. Hopefully Trump will agree to a September debate and they can get back in this thing. And the voters still don't like Donald Trump. That's kind of the best case scenario, right? They're not going to entertain the possibility of dropping out. Certainly they're not going to confront Biden about dropping out. That would have to be, I think, a combination of pressure from Democratic electeds and then eventually Jill Biden or his family. I'm skeptical that's going to happen. Tim, like, you know this. I mean, the bet was we're losing this race. We got to show the electorate that Biden still can throw a fastball. And we got to remind the electorate that, like, Trump is a lunatic. That's the two-front war here, to mix metaphors. And obviously, they come out of the debate last night with the race that's even more of a referendum on Biden than it is a choice. So there's no good way for them to spin this.
Why did we have the earliest debate in American history? Right. The earliest debate ever before last night was September 23rd. So it's a full 3 months before the earliest debate we've ever had. Why? Because Joe Biden wanted it to be early. Joe Biden's team wanted it to be early. Why they want it to be early? Not because, as Bill Kristol might think, that it was some deep machination that they knew he was going to faceplant and that they wanted to have an out before the convention. They wanted to do it early because, like you're saying, they thought that Joe Biden could assuage concerns and focus the minds of the voters on Donald Trump and say, okay, he's up for it. Now we have to get serious. This other person we're running against is a criminal lunatic. And like, he failed epically on both counts, right? Like, the race is not focused on Trump now, and he did not assuage concerns. He exacerbated them.
Yeah, no, that's precisely it. And they put all the chips in the middle of the table, and the House walked away with a whole lot of them. But your point is right. I mean, the best possible news for Biden coming out of this is the calendar does say June, right? It doesn't say October. So they at least have a chance at recovery. And, you know, you hear a lot of this, you know, maybe the January 6th case can move ahead this fall. Maybe you can get a guilty verdict on Trump on that case before election. I think that's unlikely, but obviously that's also kind of a long shot hope. Look, I think, Tim, the actual best case scenario is that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and he obviously says and does things that are outlandish and that are self-sabotaging of his own prospects. So, like, I'm not sure that Biden can recover, but it's possible that Trump could lose it.
So that's what you're hoping for right now, that Donald Trump self-implodes, which is possible. But for all of Donald Trump's personal flaws and weaknesses and failures and et cetera, like, what is he going to do the next 4 months that's worse than what he's done already? He has some impulse control, as we saw last night. Like, he is not an idiot. And so why would he debate again? What is the thing that would turn it around? I mean, who knows? Maybe Biden has a good convention and the polls stay close and Trump does feel like he has to debate again because he won so easily the first time, he thinks it'll help him. If I'm squinting, like, that's the best case scenario, right? That, like, we're so polarized, the polls stay close, Trump feels like he does need to debate again.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario, is that Trump impulsively says, I can wipe him out once more, give me another shot, and that he gives in against the judgment of his staff and then, you know, shows why the country turned him out 4 years ago. I just don't think that's very likely. And Tim, I think you make a central point here, which is the best thing Trump has going for him is that the country is desensitized to so much of his conduct, right? People know who Trump is. It's so priced in. And the hard truth for a lot of people to, you know, grasp, Democrats and never Trumpers, is a lot of voters don't give a shit that he's a bad guy and says and does outrageous things, right? It's, they just don't care that much. And that's the hard part to swallow, is this is more about the American voter than about Donald Trump. And that's why he's poised to win right now.
I want to go back to something you talked about earlier about how you don't think that the inner sanctum of Biden's advisors are going to talk to him about this. I just don't accept that. I don't understand. I mean, you know, it was what I wrote about this morning, like, given the stakes, I'm not even saying I'm definitely for Biden, you know, quitting. I think that there are bad options in front of us. But, like, the idea that they wouldn't talk to him about it is crazy to me. And, like, this is the job of being a consultant. I mean, I understand that maybe the intensity of the Klieg light here is a little higher than it was, but I had to sit in a room with Jeb Bush and a bunch of fucking family members of a former president, and with a bunch of family members saying, we can still do this, we can still come back. And I had to sit there as like a 32-year-old and say, I'm sorry, sir, I think it's over. Like, I think we need to talk about a concession speech. Like, I was no hero. I'm not like looking for a medal. Like, that is your job. You don't think these people are going to do that?
I don't think that the kind of folks Biden wants around him are the people who are going to convey that message. And, especially because of the response, what they would get, which is, oh, yeah, so what's the alternative? What are we going to do? Are we just going to, like, wave a wand and nominate somebody else?
Kamala is the alternative. Andrew Egger wrote about this in the newsletter this morning. I don't know how you can look at last night and not think Kamala. Kamala has a lot of problems. Maybe the decision is, oh, the country's too racist and misogynist to nominate her, and we already tried this with Hillary. We shouldn't. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. We have bad options, but, like, Kamala would have done way better than Joe Biden last night. Way better.
Shameless plug for our book that Alex Burns and I wrote, This Will Not Pass, available on Amazon.com if you want a good July 4th beach read, mountain read, lake read, whatever. But I'll tell you why that the Kamala question, it wouldn't be taken seriously in the West Wing. Just look at our book, because that'll tell you what the view of Kamala Harris is in the West Wing, the actual view of her, you know? And so that's why I don't think that they're going to seriously entertain that question in Biden's inner circle, you know?
All right, so he stays in. I feel like I'm pressing you like you're fucking Corinne Jean-Pierre right now. Like, J-Mart, explain this to me. What do they do this week? They're going to go on 4th of July vacation now? Like, what does he do? Like, what does he do to demonstrate that he is up for this?
There's an old saying of hang a lantern on your problem in politics. Biden's got to have fun with it. Biden's got to try to diffuse it the best he can. It's like, look, it wasn't my best night. You know, poke fun at Trump and poke fun at himself and then try to move on and say, I had one bad night. This guy gave us four awful years and will give us at least four more terrible years. I don't know if that's going to be enough, but that's obviously what he's going to have to do in the great pivot. But yeah, this is the other issue, Tim, is that he's not somebody who's 47 years old who can go out and campaign 16 hours a day. He's not going to spend like the next 3 days barnstorming the country pushing back, right? So
yeah, he's going to the Hamptons tomorrow, I understand, for a fundraiser. What do you think those old rich folks are going to be saying to him?
He does a retail stop in North Carolina Friday and then he'll raise money. Yeah, can you imagine the kind of Dem panic in those circles, the big money circles? I mean, these folks were already alarmed, and now it's going to be off the charts. Here's the issue, though. I'm not sure what he can say that's going to change it, because so much of this was his appearance and his demeanor, not anything that he said or didn't say. It's just the look from the moment he walks out onto that stage with that gait he has now to the side-by-side shot of him. Yeah, he said some things that got him into verbal cul-de-sacs that were a bit rough. Tim, I think the bigger issue is just the appearance, and most American voters see the appearance and say, no, not happening.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree the appearance is bad, but I reject that the substance was okay. I've had people saying this to me on Twitter, like, look at the transcripts. I'm like, yeah, look at the transcripts. Right. I mean, in Morning Shots this morning, Andrew Egger put out a transcript of what Kamala Harris said about the abortion question versus what Biden said. Right. What Biden said is incoherent. Yes. Kamala Harris, was it, you know, the greatest oratory since Daniel Webster? No, but like she can prosecute a case against Donald Trump, at least on the topic of abortion, on the subject.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm not making the case on Biden's.
I know you're not.
I'm just saying that, like, to use a real estate metaphor, that when the buyer got to the house to check it out, they didn't even get inside to look at the rooms because they were so stuck on the outward appearance of the house and the termites crawling out of the woodwork before their very eyes.
Yeah. You know? And that is true. And the TikTok videos are going to be just unimaginably horrible. I mean, I have texts from some mutual friends of ours who don't even like politics, don't watch politics, turned it on for 3 minutes. They're like, what is happening? It was shocking.
That's
the visuals were shocking to people that are not paying attention, to the people that are not listening to the Border podcast, who only get, you know, this stuff, you know, remediated through social media. It was shocking for some of those people.
Yeah, and people who don't like Trump. And Trump has no business in public life, but take a 30-second look at that and say, oh, come on, of course not.
All right. Of course not. I don't want you to out any sources or anything, but so this is not about any internal info you have, but I just want to play a little parlor game with you. If there was going to be somebody that was going to talk in the Democratic elected class, like, who is it going to be?
Yeah.
Who would it even be?
Well, here's somebody who I would put in the top five of House Democrats who would speak out, because she has got a knack for speaking her mind. And she comes from a really competitive district in the Lehigh Valley of Pennsylvania. And that's Susan Wild, who's had a couple of tough races and is in a very competitive district. And I saw that she told Max Cohen over at Punchbowl News this morning that she would only talk about Trump's performance last night. And boy, if somebody like that isn't willing to go on the record about Biden, then I'm not sure who is.
That's a very Jay Mardian deep cut of a mid-bench House person. How about somebody the listeners know? Is there anybody the listeners know that will speak out?
Absolutely.
Obama, Hillary.
The flat top nine-finger farmer from Big Sandy, Montana.
John Tester.
Everybody knows who John Tester is, right? In the Bulwark audience. Yeah. So John Tester running an estate in which Donald Trump is poised to carry between 17 and 20 points. You know, like, will John Tester say, look, Joe's been a friend of mine, he's been a good president, but like, this is not responsible. He'd be the obvious guy to do it. Maybe Sherrod Brown running in Ohio, which is similarly bad, not quite as bad as Montana for Democrats. But Tim, those would be the two Democrats I'd look to in the Senate who are up this year.
Like, just looking at raw political considerations, I don't know how John Tester, Sherrod Brown, like, what else would you do? They're just going to go down with the ship.
And as you know, from, you know, the Republicans and obviously Democrats that you know so well, the politicians act in their own self-interest. It's all about self-preservation. And that's what gets them to move. That's why Republicans rally to Trump, because their voters like Trump and they defer to their voters. And it's the same issue now with Democrats, in the sense that they're going to do what they think helps them survive politically. In this context, in a general election. And that would be the only reason why Democrats would speak out. And that's why the John Testers of the world would be the ones who would do it.
We have had this question on this podcast for a few months now. Why is Bob Casey and Tammy Baldwin and Ruben Gallego running so much ahead of Joe Biden? We got the answer. We know what the real answer is to that question last night. And so maybe this frees some of these guys up a little bit, right? Because they were already winning. Right. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a reverse coattails issue, or maybe I'm wrong. Or do you think that they're at risk now of having a coattails issue?
Here will be the great timestamp check for Bulwark readers and listeners. Who is the first Democrat on the ballot to air an ad vowing to be a check on President Donald Trump? Right. Because that'll be the reveal that they're conceding Trump's likely to win and they're cutting bait. You would think that would be the case, given the polling that consistently shows that this is not necessarily a bad year for Democrats, but it could be a bad year for Joe Biden. And Tim, it kind of reminds me of like the last presidential election, except for the other guys. Like 2020 was a pretty good year for the Republicans. Like Susan Collins won while Joe Biden was winning her state pretty convincingly. It was always the great preposterous joke of the lie that Biden stole the election and that he didn't win fair and square. It's like, it was a good cycle for Republicans down the ballot, right?
Right.
Like, it was the craziest, weirdest conspiracy of all time. Like, Joe Biden wired it so he won, but like, it wasn't a great night for his party. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Joe Biden didn't want to have a big majority in the Senate. It was all part of a secret deep state Joe Manchin, Joe Biden plot, yeah, like to keep the party in check.
Sorry, Sarah Gideon, you're going to have to eat this one. We're bringing back Susan Collins to keep the big lie. Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
Think about deep plots there. Sarah Gideon. Come on, Bulwark listener. You know who that is.
Joe and Susan just love each other so much. It's an old Senate insiders game. He just wanted to have Susan around. Okay. The Trump VP pick, which is kind of meaningless, but just as an insight into Trump's mindset right now, you got to feel like if you're Doug Burgum, you know, or I don't know, maybe not. I don't know. Do you think that a confident Trump, how do you think that impacts Volt's VP and how he behaves in the next few weeks?
Who's the best person that has a personal dynamic with Trump? If he is stripped of any political considerations, he just wants somebody to ride with, as the kids would say. Like, who is that, right? If Trump could just pick somebody that he likes, who doesn't annoy him, who looks the part, and who he thinks is going to, like, not track mud in the club, who is that? You know, that's the question. And I will tease here for Bulwark listeners. I'm working on something, sort of a bigger picture piece about this general topic. So keep your eyes peeled on politico.com here about that.
Can you have a family member? I guess he doesn't really like his kids. Oh, is Ivanka back in play as VP? Maybe a little too risky.
Well, she's a Florida resident now, Tim, so that she would have the Rubio problem as well.
That's true. Though the Trumps have many golf clubs, something that I've had to learn. Okay, J-Mart, I wish I could have had you on a more fun day where we could have had a couple of pops. But I appreciate getting some mud on your face today on the Bulwark podcast, and I hope to see you in Louisiana soon.
Happy to serve my country and stand in solidarity with my fellow 504 resident. And also happy to introduce Bulwark listeners to Susan Wild and the deep cut of the gentle lady from the Lehigh Valley. But thanks for having me, Tim. Go Tigers.
I bet listeners will like her quite a bit. Go Tigers indeed. And hopefully we can turn this thing around next week. We'll see y'all back here on Monday. Peace.
Hold your grandmother's Bible to your breast. Gonna put it to the test. You wanted it to be blessed. And in your heart, you know it to be true. You know what you gotta do. They all depend on you. And you, Randy Long. Yeah, you, Randy Long. How this will end. You, Randy Long. You,
The Borg Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.